Alright, here we go. Oh, everybody, we are back at Hey Kids Comics once again. I'm Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is producer, co-host, and hetero life mate, the Jedi, Cole Houston. Say hello.
Always.
Yes. Cole will be driving.
Hello, hello, hello.
We are disclaimers up front, still functioning with weird internet, so if things get garbled or weird, we apologize in advance. Secondly, due to flesh...
Garbled sounds a bit like a Clockwork Orange type of...
It does!
With Droogie's got all jarbled.
I wonder if jarbled is a British word. I was actually, while you were saying that, I was just thinking that I bet jarbled is a... It sounds like a James Bond villain. It sounds like it would be a great name for a James Bond villain.
That is very true, you know. James, this is Enoch Jarbled.
Enoch! God damn it. Enoch Jarbled. Which, hashtag Enoch Jarbled is our hashtag for this episode.
We want to see that growing out of here, Enoch Jarbled.
Yeah, trending. We want to see hashtag Enoch Jarbled be trending after this. But yeah, so weird internet stuff, if you hear that going on. Secondly, due to... you know, flesh work, because for those of you that don't know, my alter ego, you know, the one that lives in the real world and not in the Invasion of Canada North based, yeah, our Invasion of Canada North based that I've currently inhabited, you know, has a job that he just got and is trying to acclimate. So I haven't done a whole lot of research for the next couple episodes. Just ample warning up front to be transparent. So Cole will be driving,
and he's particularly jarbled as a result. You know?
Yeah, I am really jarbled. I'm really Enoch jarbled. Hashtag Enoch jarbled. As the result of that. So. But I'm going to have Cole tell everybody what this is about. This is his brilliant idea for a story arc. So I'm going to have Cole take you into this thing.
Absolutely. What we're doing here, this was one where I put forward the concept and then promptly forgot the title of it. When Andy says, why don't we go forward with this one? And I mistook it, the context and the meaning. And I'm like, oh, we could do that. We could do an arc on that topic. And then he pointed out that he was referring to just a portion of the title. This is, of course, where does he get those wonderful toys? And this arc, we wanted to explore a little bit more in depth than we have. We've talked about tech. We've talked about superhero gadgets and thingamabobs and the amazing work that Enoch Garbled does.
Just amazing. Just amazing. Now he's like a French impressionist painter in my brain. Like, he's really evolving for me, Enoch is.
So we basically wanted to talk about a lot of the gadgetry, weaponry, and both technological and mystical.
Yeah.
That are employed by various comic characters. And needless to say, there is far more out there than you could imagine. Than we could ever talk about in an hour, or even over 5 hours time, especially at the rate we're getting going. But there's some highlights, some key points, and part of the fun was just breaking this into five parts. You know, how do you break all that rich history down into individual, how do you categorize all this stuff? And that's often the challenge for any of these arcs.
Right.
So we're going to lead in. I decided to just kind of keep it a little more simple, one or two words in most cases. This is handheld.
Handheld.
And handheld. It occurred to me that most, the abundance of tech is just something you can pretty much hold in your fist.
Right.
Be it a pistol that does fun things, or a grenade of some kind, or some sort of stick that's powerful.
Or not powerful. I mean, that's the brilliant thing. That's what really got me interested in this episode in particular, is that you've got a lot of this stuff out there that can be handheld and be super powerful. And keep in mind, you know, later in the arc, like you were saying, we're going to have a mystical thing. So we're not going to be talking about Mjolnir or you know, any of the other mystical artifacts. We're sticking straight tech gadgety stuff. But
the soul sword or the witch blade,
which unfortunately for me means we're not going to be able to talk about the ebony blade of the Black Knight till later.
Okay. Fear not, fans of the ebony blade of the Black Knight.
Dane Whitman, the Black Knight.
Yes.
which total encompassing numbers is one, and he's sitting on the phone right now. He's sitting with a headset on right now. But
that's right. He's actually recording this podcast as we speak, as half of the hosts.
When Netflix
so
asked us,
I have the sole fan of that particular sword.
Me and Neil Adams. That's it. Just me and Neil Adams. That's the only people that are fans of the Black Knight. When Netflix released their poll, like their write-in for the next Netflix, you know, round of series, one vote, Black Knight. It's me. I guarantee it. Just one vote, and for Dr. Druid, while we're at it, but. The thing that got me the most about this is you have, like, your Batman, which we could fill this entire episode with Batman if we were so inclined. He has enough tech that fits in his hand that we could do that.
Absolutely. We could do, like, an extra... You could do an extra arc just on Batman tech.
But you've got... Yeah, you really could. But you've got Daredevil, who has a baton. You know, in some instances, it's a baton that snaps together. But... It's basically just a stick. You've got a guy
sometimes
named Stick.
It has a hook.
That's right. Sometimes it has a hook. Sometimes it has a grapple. But
sometimes it's like a candy cane.
It is sometimes, especially when you buy that. What was the toy? The four inch Marvel toy that was.
Oh yeah, the old. It wasn't a Superpowers. It was. Well, I know exactly the original Toy Biz Daredevil with his Billy Log.
Billy Log, right. Right.
It wasn't so much a Billy Club as a Billy Log.
But then you have, like I said, you have got Billy Logs sometimes, and then you have, but one of the most powerful, and when I was thinking about it, because I was thinking about just this, because I like to stump the coal, that's one of my favorite things, and I don't know if he's thought about this, so I'm really curious, and I'm coming right out of the gate with it. One of the most powerful, gadgets, one of the most powerful handheld weapons that I can possibly think of, is Two-Face's coin.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is I know I would not have taken that approach, but like the fact that has the power of psychology behind it.
And that is so important, is... Handheld and handheld as a symbol, you know.
Yeah.
It also has the power of probability. It has the power of psychosis. It has the power of it makes the decisions for him, live or die by the flip of this coin. You know, it is a weapon. It is a weapon in his hands. He might not pull a trigger. He might not stab somebody with it. But for him, it's a weapon. So I think that was my big stump the coal one for this issue. I got it out of the way early. I feel all right about that.
That's impressive. I like that.
But what about...
I like that a lot because it's not the sort of thing you would think of in that context.
What about to quote Boondock Saints, what about the symbology of handheld things? You know, because there's I kind of want to talk about this in each stage, because you've got certain things that certain heroes and villains use that means something. for me in this story arc, you've got Captain America and his shield. You've got the Joker and his bang gun. You've got, you know, and then you later on in different arcs, you get like Iron Man's armor or Mjolnir or, you know what I mean? But as it's, or Batman's bat suit for that matter. But for the purposes of this, like, how do you feel about that? Like the symbolism of something like that.
Yeah, I think that's another very good and valid point, is that you have as a symbol, Captain America's shield, be it the original Delta or the much more throwable circular shield, you know, they are symbolic of the Captain. They are symbolic of the America.
They are.
So you have this sort of situation where you have, you know, layers of symbolism, because, you know, you see that coming at you. You know that you've made a bad choice in opposing the shield.
True.
Before you yield. but the thing about it is, they do become iconic, like the Batarang. These are things where, you know, if you saw them, you know, if you saw a Batarang fly by, you'd be pretty sure you're not far from Batman.
That's true. That's, iconography. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I like it. But you know, and they mean something. They mean something to the reader, too. You know,
exactly.
Batman, when all is lost, and, you know, Hydra's overrunning the raft, or, you know, there's a bunch of, I remember a particular instance in my favorite issue of Captain America that I cannot remember the issue number on, so forgive me. it's the same one where he uses the same one where he kills a guy with the Uzi, and he was on the plane with the Flag Smasher.
Yeah.
There's a scene where they're in a chalet, because they went to, like, some Nordic country. They were, you know, they had hostages, and, you know, they were threatening to kill one every hour. You know, the standard terrorism stuff. And
the exhaust chestnut.
Yes, yeah, the that has been roasted over the open fire.
Tired chestnut. At this point, it is thoroughly exhausted.
it's got to lay down for a nap. It's been a day for that chestnut.
You guys go ahead. This chestnut's going to take a nap.
But this, you're in there, and you know, he's on TV and he's talking, and all of a sudden, you don't see Captain America because you don't need to. And that's my favorite thing about whenever it's portrayed in this fashion. It's just the shield comes flying into frame, you know, into the panel.
That's
here comes
point.
The shield.
It's like the Batarang. You know, I was saying earlier, you see a Batarang fly by, you know that Batman's nearby. And I, in saying that, I didn't really realize that the visual of the translation artist to reader is so powerful, because you, like you say, you don't have to have the character there. You know that, you know, part of the translation of the action of them saving the day is their iconic weapon.
Yeah, it's hope, right? It comes into the panel, and you have hope that the day is going to be saved. That's your gut reaction with the Joker, and when he pulls out the long barrel 357, whatever it is. I think it's anxiety that's translated, because it could be an actual gun, it could be the bang gun. You don't know which way he's going to go because he's the Joker. When it's a Batarang, I don't think it's hope, but I think that, you know,
I think they're more, that's dread that you're sharing with Bruce Wayne.
It's dread, some vengeance.
It's shared dread.
It's the night, really. It's fifth meal. You know fifth meal's coming when you see the...
Well, and speaking of dread and handheld
weapon. Oh, nice transition.
Yeah.
Professional.
Judge Dredd's little Victorian riverboat control gun. It goes in everything from full stop to full steam ahead. You just expect some little tiny guy down the hill to the gun, ringing a bell and calling through a funnel.
Calling Twain.
Full steam ahead on this one, boys.
Calling Twain's from the back of his motorcycle.
Yeah, exactly. It's the gun that invokes Steamboat Willie. It's
right. No, but you know, there's another one that's like that, and it's one that I hadn't thought of until I was really thinking hard about, you know, the outside, the fringes of this, and that's Star-Lord's Element gun. That's I think in some respects similar to Judge Dredd's, you know, Omni all-purpose pistol, but you know, because he can essentially he can't. I don't think it's audibly. Activated. I don't think it has Siri like an iPhone, like Judge Dredd's gun does. But, but you know, he can change it to fire and you know whatever you know the element situation that he can do with his gun. And that was one I thought of, which he did not use in the movie, by the way. But it is very very prevalent in the comics.
So it's kind of like a Swiss Army gun.
It is, yeah.
It has all the different.
Exactly.
You know, what needs are, you can...
But Dredd's another one, like, you know, that when the gun comes out, you know that the law has come, essentially. Like, and they do that very well in some of the comics, and I think they did it in the first movie. I think maybe the only thing they did really well in the first movie was, you know, when you see this hand cannon come out, you know that justice is about to be served. And speaking of hand cannon, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the biggest hand cannon of them all right now, which is the Samaritan from Hellboy. And
yeah, that is the one that, you know, Harry Callahan would weep.
Right. Right. Like that is some, you're talking about iconography. That is some iconography right there. Now, we can't talk about the other side of Hellboy yet. But we will.
Yeah.
But we can't talk about the Good Samaritan.
What he has been given by his earthly companions.
Right.
You know, he comes fully equipped with a lot of mysticism, but you know, here you have a conventional weapon supercharged and purpose-built for the disposition, the disillusion of nasty mystical things.
Right.
It's made with all these component parts that are holy or at least painful to deadly to the nasty
right, it has like critters. White oak and silver and holy water and unlike Judge Dredd where he has to call out what he wants.
Oh, and things like that. Yeah.
Right, they just shove them all into each shell that goes into it. They're like, we'll just handle it all at once. We're not gonna mess around.
Like you get this like special multi clip that's got like a little bit of whatever you might want. It's all in there. You just conjure up whichever one you want, or maybe each shell. You know, just locks in whichever. Aspect, all the rest is built in, so even if you call out one, you might be getting all six of them.
Exactly, you're gonna take it.
If it hits, it's just right, you know. Shouldn't have messed with the law. And then there was a, one of the things you're speaking to the iconography, like, you know, you can see the Batarang, or you can see the cap shield.
Right.
And you know... even if they're not in panel. But another really interesting thing about that kind of iconography is imagine, if you will, if you wanted to go very simplistic with a comic cover, and if you saw, like, maybe a snowbank or a desert scene or something, or a tree or something, and buried in these thing, in whatever it is that's soft enough to accept these weapons, you saw a sai, a katana,
yeah.
A bow staff, and
good point. And a nunchuck,
nunchucks.
Yeah.
If you saw, or even if you just saw them laying out on this table or something, and that was your sole comic cover, you wouldn't even have to have a logo on.
That's very true.
Everyone know exactly. What this comic was about, because these weapons have become synonymous. If you put a handgun or one of those Scarface Little Friend M16 with grenade launcher option,
yeah.
on a cover. It could be any number of characters.
Right.
Likely as not, you're going to sway toward the Punisher, unless you happen to notice it's another company's but you know, it could still be somebody else.
Right.
But you see that collection of weaponry, and you know exactly who it is. Even Taskmaster has adopted a bit of that as well with his shield.
Right.
It's the shield becomes, if those who use them, almost like a drum head for like a band. So, like, you know, if you have an image of the Beatles drum, you know that Ringo's behind that.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Same sort of idea if you see the Captain America shield, you know, the iconic shield, or that sort of weird Nordic T-looking thing, you'd know that's Taskmaster.
What's cool about what you just said...
Same as the drumhead for Herbert Spencer.
What's really cool about what you just said is, I think that that's a really good litmus test for this, is if you just take their iconic item and put it on a cover without any logo, or you just saw art, right? You were at a convention,
yeah,
and you saw somebody's art that just had Captain America's shield, or just had... you know, a batarang, or just had Green
Black
Arrow's
gauntlets.
Yeah, Green Arrow's bow or Hawkeye's bow. Like, you would know. Like, that's how powerful that is.
You would need the bow in color.
Right. Right.
In most cases, just so you could 100% certain. I mean, if you see a boxing glove arrow, you're about 99.9% certain it's Green Arrow, even in a monochrome.
Right.
But, you know. I don't believe that Hawkeye has ever used a boxing glove arrow.
Unless it was to make fun of Green Arrow. Unless Marvel was taking a shot across the bow. I wouldn't put it past
it. Could have been.
But yes, yeah, so what are your... I'm curious to know, what are your... I want to know, like, your favorite or your favorites of this genre, of this type of thing. And there are some really ridiculous ones that we can get into. But
yeah, you know, some of the ones that stick out are like, speaking of things you could just have sitting on a table and you could identify, is the pumpkin bomb.
Oh yeah,
popularized by Green Goblin.
Absolutely right. Yes. No, that's because, you know, really true. Yeah.
In being slavish to a theme, having a jack-o'-lantern, a hand grenade of sorts, is vital. Another shield that sticks out is a little more obscure to people who aren't overly familiar with the character, is Guardian from DC, often seen hanging out with Superman.
Yes, yes.
With this strange sort of police badge or...
it looks like a police badge.
Fraternal organization seal, you know, I don't know, is he with the Elks or... It's like that symbol you see out the big billboard outside the city, and there's Qantas and Optimus Club, and then Guardian.
Oh hey, it's adopt a highway with that symbol next to it. I guess he's got this mile. All right,
he's got it covered. He not only keeps it free of trash and debris, but also riffraff.
Yeah, unless it's his riffraff, he's allowed to have the Newsboy Army, is his riffraff. Yeah, he's allowed to have his riffraff.
Well, he utilizes the Newsboy Legion to go and clean up the unwelcome riffraff. You know?
Right.
And Highwayman. This is an entire stretch of the highway that's been completely free of Highwayman for the last 20 years that he's sponsored it.
But just the last 20 years.
Yeah. But I mean, ironically, if you did your research, it has actually been free of Highwayman for the last 217 years. But, you know, we're not gonna nitpick.
But, you know, when I'm gonna make this joke and I feel bad. This is gonna be a bad joke and I feel bad for telling it, but I'm going there. When Waylon Jennings came through there, they had to detour him because they don't let any highwaymen down that stretch of road. Willie Nelson was the same poor guy. Like, he just wanted to get to the next show, and they're like, no, you're going to have to go around. It's going to be about 7 minutes of a detour.
But it was a happy accident because in both cases they got a nice fix. There was some...
Now I want to put highwaymen at the beginning. I've already used it. I've already used highwaymen, but now I want to put highwaymen on at the beginning, but I won't do it. I already know what song I'm putting at the beginning of this one, so. But
I look forward to it every time.
But yeah, so the Guardian Shield hadn't occurred to me at all. So that's really cool. Like it is very iconic.
Yeah, it's not as well known, but it still has its own built-in iconography. And then there's a fun little thing that occurred to me that it wasn't even on my original list. It just sort of popped in my head from back in the New Teen Titans, like the new you know, it was like New Teen Titans. It just became Teen Titans. It became New Teen Titans again. During that period, there was a story about this supervillain called Trident.
Okay.
Who, not ironically, utilized a trident in his criminal activities.
Sure.
And it was sort of this really neat little he said, she said kind of storyline, because each, you know, different individuals or pairings of Titans had gone up against Trident in these various capers. And then they finally put together that, because Trident was found dead, but they'd somehow put together, I don't really remember the particulars, but what it worked out was that Trident was actually three different guys.
Oh, that's cool.
All donning the same costume and going out and, you know, I guess committing whatever crimes were best suited to their own particular abilities and skills as Larson, as criminals.
So it's like triathlon, but for bad things.
Yeah,
it was 3D man.
Somehow they I guess it allowed them to work in shifts or something.
Mm-hmm.
And seemed to be tirelessly committing crimes. You know, I felt sorry for the end of Trident, who was there was one of them had the flu or something, and now God's truth, he's actually had like the sniffles, and then the other guy didn't the sniffles and. And compotes they worked out. I think that the story was Blue's Clues or something like that, but the core idea was rather clever in using the idea of a trident or a three-pronged approach to things.
See, I really like the ones that do... I like
the back.
Yeah, I like the ones that do creative things. I like the ones that take it in a different, you know, a different direction, because anybody can have... You know, I think that for all that we love Batman, I think Batman gets a little ridiculous with this idea, you know, the shtick that basically anything that he's ever needed, he can produce from, you know, from the magical bag of holding that he has on his belt and
exactly.
Have it.
Yeah, it was brought to its most ridiculous extreme in the 60s television series, where he just happened to be trying out his Bat thermal underwear on the day he was dead. You know, he and Robin were thrown into snow cones.
Right.
But at times, the regular comics almost seem that way. Like, you happen to have that.
Right.
You've never had before. And that concept was very well invoked, in a an article I read. I think it was Mike Grell was being interviewed on the subject of the comic John Sable Freelance.
Okay.
And very obscure old indie title. But one of the points that he made is, you know, since he was writing a character that's essentially a guy who happens to be very, you know, probably James Bond level skilled fighter and marksman, etc., the important thing in writing the stories is he can't simply pull a gun out of nowhere.
Right.
Right. You know, if the story calls for something, there has to be a reason that he has what he needs at the time. You can't just conjure these things out of thin air. And I think it was a powerful but very subtle jab at the way a lot of intrinsically human superheroes often have just what they need laying around the house.
Right.
And, you know, it would take a superhuman level of foresight to happen upon some of these things.
Well, and some sort of time, it's like, you know, space folding technology to just have this stuff at your, you know, at your disposal at all times. I realize that, you know, probably sunk billions of dollars into miniaturization technology, you know, so that he could have as much on his person at any given time as he wants, but
still, like, you know, the amount of stuff that he's purported to carry at any given time is kind of ridiculous. So I like the ones that do, like the most innocuous weapon in the world, in my opinion, is one of the most iconic for me, and I think for you too, and that's the Blue Beetle's BB gun.
Oh yes,
because it's non-lethal.
That's a neat one. Yeah, he's sort of like the Dr. Heller of DC superheroes.
Right,
completely effective, but completely non-lethal. Like a flamethrower. Speaking of, you know, handheld weaponry. But yeah, it's a matter of being mindful of, you know, the capacity of what you can carry on board.
Right.
And, you know, and putting some logic behind it. Because otherwise, you know, it just seems like you're farting stuff out at will.
Which it does seem that way, and a great many Batman. It's to me. It's the what was it? The one of the coolest and most ridiculous handheld devices ever to be used in comics was Reed Richards' Ultimate Nullifier. The thing that literally somehow with science can nullify anything. What does that mean exactly? Who knows? But
and apparently it had a reputation that grossly preceded it.
Right, because I think there was Black one panel. Yeah,
on site. It was. And it was terrified of it because of that recognition. I mean, this thing, which doesn't look like anything, it looks like a really bad attempt at trying to, you know, rethink the squirt gun.
Yeah, it looks really bad. It looks like a reverse, like, badly... it was like the first design for the hypodermic needle that went horribly awry, is what it looks like.
Exactly. It's like a bad attempt at making the cell or something. But, you know, obviously something pretty powerful and pretty well known, though no one knows why. And it was, you know, Infinity Gauntlet level.
That's another one,
knowledge.
Yeah,
the Infinity Gauntlet is one of those bits of, I don't know where that falls, really.
It falls everywhere. That's I think that's the point. Is like we could talk about the Infinity Gauntlet the next five, and it would be fine.
So yeah, we'll go ahead and just start that off right now.
Yeah, let's just do it. Let's just do it.
Because the gauntlet itself is little more than a... it's almost like one of those Hot Wheels carrying cases you'd get with the little trays inside.
Right, right.
And the little trays to put your... It's kind of like that, sort of, because you've got that built-in anticipation of collecting all the individual pieces. You know, collect all six. And each one has their own, you know, specific slot. If you're playing right.
And not only that, but it's also as far as super powerful omni-powerful weaponry or whatever you want to call it, because it goes beyond the idea of a weapon. It's super gaudy. Like, whoever came up with that, it's really, really garish. Like, is it Egyptian?
Yeah, like, it's like something you would, you know, find on clearance. You know, that was somebody's idea of high fashion.
Right.
And really nobody was buying it. Or it was one of those things you see every week. And then, you know, like the women who look like they're dressed as like some sort of furry avocado or something. Some impractical outfit. And like, you know, what is the point of any of this? It's just, you know, it's like concept cars. And then somebody decided to go ahead and keep that one because it had those handy little slots that they realized were Infinity Gem sized.
Right. Well, it looks like it looks like something I would see out of an ad from like one of those 70s fashion magazines. You know, some guy in a spread collar shirt.
Yeah, I'd expect to see like the ad for that on PlaidStallions.com.
Exactly. Exactly.
On the back of Omni magazine or something.
Damn it. That's perfect. Can we have somebody do that? I want somebody to mock somebody that got an Infinity Gauntlet not this year but last year at San Diego Comic-Con. Go put on like a bad 70s outfit, like just all polyester, and have the thing and make a fake ad out of it. That would be absolutely perfect. I can't imagine anything better
than
that.
With your rest of your chin on the gauntleted fist, you know, like, hey, ladies.
Hey, ladies. That's perfect. That is literally perfect. I can't think of anything
perfect
more perfect.
Wearing the discotheque. So, and speaking of the, you know, the quintessence, to quote Secret Life of Walter Mitty, of the handheld devices, is the wrist-mounted web shooter.
Yes.
We would really be remiss not to mention Spider-Man's web shooter.
Absolutely.
That's really one of the most clever things to ever come out of comics, because it's practical. It's one of those things where somebody could actually have come up with that idea, you know, just a simple device that depresses and you have some sort of bizarre compressed chemical you could probably make billions of dollars on. You know, Peter wanted to save up for a car, he could have bought a freaking limousine off the patent rights for it. That's
right. Easy.
Stop.
No, that's very true.
You know, material science is begging for stuff like that. And of course, it would naturally not only be incredibly handy in the construction of bridges and earthquake-proof buildings and all manner of practical applications, it would naturally be subverted into a weapon.
Of course.
Because all the best stuff is. And, you know, on the other a lot of weaponry gets it into cool ideas like the microwave oven. So, you know.
And the ultimate nullifier.
Yeah, sometimes we take it back.
You know, Peter Parker had another really powerful handheld gadget, at least especially in the early days, that I think that bears mentioning, that came out of, you know, regular everyday life. And that was the 35mm camera. You know, that's how he made a living. That's how he convinced the world that he wasn't Spider-Man. Was I took pictures of Spider-Man? You know, like there's no better alibi.
No one ever wondered why he was the only one who ever got that close.
Right, right.
I mean, you got paparazzi with a lens 17 feet long, getting fuzzy Sasquatch level pictures of Spider-Man. Meanwhile, Peter Parker's coming into the Daily Planet with a whole stack of Sears Portrait Studio images.
His glamour shots.
Nobody is really making any kind of connection.
I would make an argument that Peter Parker is probably the most successful superhero in any universe, and here's why, right? Not only does he fight Doc Ock in downtown New York, or Electro, or Rhino, or whoever, but he can manage to do it while setting a timer on a 35mm camera to take a picture while he's, you know, action shots. So somehow he's getting to that camera, because these weren't like, you know, our digital, you know, phone or digital cameras now. We can't set a timer for 10 minutes from now and manage to just get, like, he was having to set it. You're a photographer, Cole. What's the length of time you can set for a camera to go off?
Yeah, I mean, with my cheesy-ass camera, I think, you know, you might get about 30 seconds, minute tops at a guess. I've rarely used the timer, so I don't really, can't say with 100% certainty, but you certainly can't, number one, set the thing. I'm sure real photographers will tell you as well that you can't set this thing for half an hour from now at 17 different angles.
Right, so he's flipping and flopping around while he's fighting.
He was pioneering like Star Wars ILM motion control cameras.
Right.
That were still photography.
Right, like, he's matte painting.
Where, you know, it just followed him. You know, it made the, forced the camera to follow him wherever he went.
So I think that is wildly successful. So kudos for something that's never been.
Speaking of, you know, Peter Parker taking pictures of Spider-Man, I want somebody to extrapolate exactly where Peter would have to have been to achieve a certain photograph. In other words, they're looking at like, wait a minute, you'd have to be
right
on the edge of this little balcony where the public isn't allowed on this courthouse building. I want Peter Parker arrested for public trespass.
Or, like, a place that he couldn't
possibly...
And we can
prove he was there by his own photography. He's dug his own grave.
Right.
This menace... Is he a threat or a menace?
I don't know. I don't know.
I can't decide.
Front page, Peter Parker. Threat or menace.
Space photographer.
I got one I need to talk about.
Bill Cosby of journalism.
Oh, my God. Whoa. That escalated. This went to a place. There's a.
I just was channeling my inner
J. Jonah
Jameson.
there's one villain that I want to talk about that I think has gotten a bad rap throughout history, and I think he has one of the best gimmicks ever, and I think he was known later as he was a member of the Frightful Four. Later, he was known as, I believe, the Trapster. But
he is actually on my list, yes.
But
indeed.
Before that, he had literally the best name I've ever seen in a comic book, and one of the best gimmicks I've ever seen, and he just gets no end of ration of shit for being awesome. And that is none other than Pastepot Pete. Pastepot Pete. One of the best names I've ever heard of come up in a comic book ever. And I just really think that he got...
Yeah, poor Pastepot Pete. He suffers from bouncing boy syndrome. He basically is saddled with a bad name. He tried to live it down in later life, like someone who grew up, you know, for their first 25 years as Aloysius, and finally just changed their name to Stanford or something like that.
But the thing
not realizing that's not a good choice either. Yeah, so he became the Trapster, which has oddly less menace than Pastepot Pete.
Right.
I don't know how that's possible, but it actually does.
And the thing that I love about Pastepot Pete is he had a gimmick and he stuck with it. He was on a He was on a team with a guy named the Wizard that literally had 800 gimmicks. He was like the awful Batman of supervillains in the Marvel Universe. He had like a flying disc and a gun that shot things and like weird magnetic boomerang discs that he threw at people and whatever else he could come up with just on the fly. Just, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna make it up. It's gonna happen. And you had this other guy that had a gun that shot glue and he just went with it. Like, God bless you for just going
yes,
with
indeed.
It.
Yes, indeed. He was effective at ranges up to 3 feet.
Right, an effective range of a meter.
If it ranges up to one, yeah. Basically, good for sneak attacks or to lay down traps in means of egress that you didn't plan to use yourself. The practical downside, if cartoons have taught us anything, with using any sort of mucilage to entrap your enemies is you have to be very mindful that you don't become entrapped yourself.
I think that if his name was Mucilage, he probably would have gotten a lot more respect than Pastepot Pete. But
there was actually a Mucilage man in The Tick.
Was there?
Who actually utilized these little fingertip dispensers from Gauntlet on his hand, very much invoking like, you know, bottles of glue. How much, you know, probably equally effective on the side of good as Pastepot Pete might have been on the side of evil. But, you know, all I could ever think about with Pastepot Pete was the Kirk Douglas and Arnold Schwarzenegger film The Villain. And the glue on the railroad crossing.
But I just wanted to make sure we gave a big shout out to Pastepot Pete because
absolutely I think another intrepid character is the Shocker.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Basically, he shoots some special form-fitted metal gauntlets to help channel his shocking power.
Now, did he have shocking
powers? Anyone who can go out... He had shocking powers.
Okay.
He had electrical powers and basically a costume that looked like an oven mitt.
Right.
Because that's the thing you want to do. Now, once you think about it, you're like, oh my God, I never realized.
This quilted,
The Shocker was a walking oven mitt.
Yes, it's quilted. He looked like three-ply toilet paper. Like,
he just, you know, sewed a bunch of oven mitts together. It's kind of similar to the Batman Returns Catwoman origin story, where you just take something you have laying around the house and chop it up, and that becomes your costume.
Right. Oh, so what are the, like we know Paste-Pot Pete is, you know, could be the best. So what are the worst, like, as we get, you know, approach the closing of the show, of this first episode of this story arc.
The magic hour.
The magic hour. We gotta catch the light. What is the worst?
Wow.
Like, what are some of the bad ones? Like, the ones where you're like, come on, really?
Well, I think, you know, it is more foot-held than... held, but certainly along the same way, misguided tech theme would be Frogman's boots with his essentially with like hyperactive version of those little spring skates that they tried to market in the 50s.
Yes, yes.
Instead of heels, you just had this sort of flat spring thing. And, you know, the human body isn't exactly conducive to that concept.
Right, right. No, and I think Spider-Man had really bad luck with villains that had awful gimmicks. Like, that's just a fact. Like, it's just a fact of life.
Another bad one, or just inexplicable one, is the Mirror Master's gun.
Oh.
I'm not really sure how one projects mirror images
with a gun
from a pistol. Yeah, so, you know, that one leaves you kind of wondering.
Right. And there's no end of gimmick guns for villains, period, because I mean, if you look at Flash's Rogues Gallery alone,
half of them have pistols of some kind.
You got cold guns, you got heat guns, you got gold guns, you got, you know, I don't know, the Wizard's Wand is another one. The
Fiddler's Fiddle.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. The Pied Piper's Pipe.
I'd have to check. Some of those things may be mystical in nature. And
right. They're just gimmicky.
Jumping a little ahead of ourselves. But there are, yeah, so many, like, funky little gimmicks that, like the Weather Wizard's Wand.
Right.
You know, which at the same time, while being gimmicky and silly, is actually some of the most amazing tech, because he's able to compress whatever it is that can conjure up weather from any given existing weather pattern locally.
Right.
If he wants a tornado on a clear day, he gets a tornado on a clear day.
Damn it.
To get that kind of remote control out of a stick.
Right.
It's some pretty amazing tech. You know, you'd think a legion of superheroes would be traveling back in time to steal that just so they could get some, you know, better tech back in their era. Which also brings to mind, it's a little off the topic of gimmicky and silly, but speaking of tech that's handheld, the Legion Flight Ring.
Absolutely.
One of Brainiac 5's best ideas, because many of them could fly, but Brainiac 5 himself and
a larger
percentage of the team,
Timberwolf,
were incapable of flight. Yeah, Timberwolf, Colossal Boy, Matter Eater Lad.
Right.
None of them could fly. Bouncing Boy can bounce a bit, but that's not quite
so. What about So what about the I'm going to say this is a pun, and you're going to know exactly what I'm going to say as soon as I say it. What about the mother of all handheld devices?
As the mothers of all handheld devices go, this one's a mother.
This one's the mother. And, of course, we're talking about the mother box. What about
indeed.
That? Like, that is an amazing...
The mother box is... That is the most universal of handheld devices.
Right.
It illustrates the necessity sometimes for something as big as an old police walkie-talkie.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the sheer volume of tech involved. Because there's precious little it can't do. I mean, if you're going to go camping, all you really need is a mother box.
Like,
because it's got that Radio Shack electronics kit fish detector that doesn't work, except that one works.
Except that one actually works.
And it will actually seek out and capture the fish for you. It will start your fire. It will convert itself into a shelter for the night, raise above the ground against the contingency of scorpions
and bears.
Wandering grizzly bears. Yes. Right.
But I've never seen it used.
Which it will ward off, mind you.
I've never seen it used as a plot eraser. I don't think I've seen the ultimate nullifier used as a get out of jail free card. There's a lot of those devices that you see that's their reason for existing. We painted ourselves into a corner. Ultimate nullifier. Okay. But I don't think I've ever seen the mother box used for anything other than being awesome.
It could be the ultimate corner opener, but yet doesn't wind up often getting used that way. In fact, at best, it gets utilized to tell some really neat, the best writers in any case always take things like that and find a little twist on them.
Right.
Find a new way to utilize them. During the Starman storyline, when they actually go to the stars, the mother box is instrumental in, number one, them being able to actually leave the fanciful rocket ship.
Right.
As it can maintain all life support, navigation aspect, even when they accidentally go traveling in time. But it also provided... basically, the original Starman's essence to be downloaded into itself advise them and keep them company as a hologram of Ted Knight.
Right. Which is awesome.
So, yeah, that was a fun little use of the mother box. I don't think anyone had ever... you usually don't have fun uses of the mother box when Darkseid's messing around with his.
Right, it's much
it's usually
more...
daily set to the task 5 or 6 hours a day to working on that anti-life equation.
Yeah, it's the most boring. If Mother Box
and then
is sentient,
at night he binge watches shows.
Right, he uses you to stream Netflix, and he's watching he's watching like CSI, and not even the good one. Like he's watching the one with Ted Danson. Like, come on, man, God, you really are the worst. Like.
Yeah, can I go back to working on that whole anti-life equation? Because suddenly that's more interesting.
Right. Okay. Well, do you have any final thoughts on this as we come in to wrap it up, as we come into the hangar?
I think that this arc is already off to the start that I was hoping for. You know, we've gathered together piles of both tech and non-tech weaponry.
Right.
Because that was an important aspect. Because sometimes it's the iconography more than the technology that's important.
Right.
And we've really had a chance to explore the way that a handheld weapon can identify a character, can become synonymous with a character, or simply be used as the way they glue their enemies into place.
That's right.
For extended periods of time until solvents are applied.
So why don't you plug us up and we'll get out of here for this particular episode.
All right. Yes, with apologies for this being a little late, we're going to be a little more on track, but it's kind of hit and miss right now. We're going to blame it on the hot summer. And things will get better because winter is coming. And with that, we're coming to you from the, speaking of binge watching, guess what I've been binge watching? We're coming to you from the JCU, from the Jedi course at JediCole.com. You can, of course, write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. Give us your feedbacks and thoughts on other weaponry and technology and doodads and flumfirmary that we may have missed on this one. And we can keep in mind for future episodes. You can watch for tweets on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. There is going to be a little more video content finally coming out. Tim Kennedy from VaderCast is really keen, formerly VaderCast, or the former podcast VaderCast, real keen on doing some video stuff with the Rancor Pits.
That's awesome.
Probably be doing some more of that soon. And there will soon be a Rancor Pit YouTube channel.
Very cool.
For the Rancor Pit Live and the Hey Kids Comics Live will be on the JCU channel to help ensure that those are preserved for all time until society collapses, which we'll be undoubtedly ushering in ourselves. And I will be appearing in a few days. I'll be wandering the hall at the North Texas Comic Book Show in Dallas at the DoubleTree Hotel. So be sure and check out Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info to be directed to that convention and all other shows in Texas, including we are just a little over a month away from the Jedi Cole Universe Comic Toy and Collectible Swap Meet in Arlington, Texas on August 22nd. $2 admission, half price with the flyer that will be found at many a comic shop in the next couple of weeks. And there will be more about that on that website, on the Facebook page. And you can also for Hey Kids Comics on Facebook.
There you go. So
I'm spent.
You're spent. So join us next week or later this week, as it turns out, for the next issue in I can't do the voice. You'll have to do the voice.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
There you go. And thank you guys so much. You know, we do apologize for the delay. We're all getting settled into this, into our new roles. So join us in a few short days where you will be able to hear. What's the second issue on the arc?
We are going to suit up.
Oh, it's suiting up time. Suiting up time. Which I do before every show. And it's scuba suit. It's all Lycra all the time when I'm recording.
Do the exactly opposite and take a naturist approach to podcasting.
That's fantastic.
I'm now required to do that solely at home. Public appearances have now been legally ruled out.
That's a shame. That's a damn shame, especially when you have that wig on.
I know.
All
I
right.
thought it would help.
I did, too. In my opinion, it did, but apparently my opinion isn't worth much. All right, everybody. Join us next week for another exciting issue of Hey Kids Comics, and don't forget to buy, collect, and enjoy your comics and hold them in your hand, just like Paste Pot Pete holds his glue gun. Good night, everybody.
Good night. He ain't what he seems.
You'll see him in your head on a TV screen. Hey, buddy, I'm warning you to turn it off. He's a ghost, he's a god, he's a man, he's a guru. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by his red right hand.